Hello and welcome to another edition of Coffee Talk, where we're always ready for that next cup of coffee. Of course, Coffee Talk is a part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. My name is Trevor Huth. Of course, I am joined by my co-host, Nate the Great Kosher. Nate, how you doing today?
I'm doing well. Trying to stay dry. Once again, it's been raining nonstop where I live.
Oh, that's no fun at all.
Yes, very waterlogged. So actually the Twins got rained out the other day and had to play a doubleheader then. But I went to a Twins game, which I want to talk about tonight.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, how did that game go? Who'd they play? Tell us about it.
Yeah, so it was last Friday night. They were playing the powerful Oakland A's. So I expected that the Twins would win, or was thinking they might, but actually went into extra innings and they won in 10 innings, 6-5 over the A's. Max Kepler was the hero. He hit a 3-run homer and then he had the walk off to win it. But I got to see Mason Miller, which was cool from a prospect Coffee Talk perspective.
Yeah. I mean, he throws hard.
Yes. He was hitting triple digits, although he walked, bases loaded walk, and so he blew a save opportunity. But yeah, it was cool to see him. And then they debuted the City Connects. They were the last team to get City Connect. I don't know if you saw that or have seen the designs yet.
I honestly don't think I have, but that just means that I can look them up right now. We can get a live reaction. So Twin City Connect jerseys. All I know is I like the Tigers. Tigers kept winning in there. Ooh, okay. It's weird how this year's City Connect, they're all going for like this shade of blue.
Yes.
Philly did it. The Tigers did it. Minnesota did it. I don't mind the jerseys. I don't know, because I'm stuck between I didn't like what the Cardinals did because they basically just made their own jersey, but I also kind of hate how a lot of these teams are going so far outside their color wheel in order to make their City Connect jerseys.
Yeah, I thought the blue does seem to be kind of overrepresented in this year's batch, but as you'd guess, the Twins are supposed to be 10,000 Lake water inspired, so like the jersey's a bunch of different shades of blue. I think it might have been better if they'd gone a different color with the pants. There's a very bright yellow. I like the hat. It has like a Northern Lights state outline, but not the worst City Connect, not the best, I don't think. But it was funny because the catcher had on all yellow protective gear, and one of the ticket takers said that he looked like Big Bird. So that made me laugh.
So we've got all the City Connect jerseys. Which one's your favorite? Which one stands out to you as your favorite?
I think I have to go with the Rockies.
I was also going to say the Rockies. We got that last year, the green. Yeah, I think those turned out really well.
I agree. The green, and it was just, I don't know, that it was close enough to their logo. You could figure out they were still the Rockies, and the green just popped for me. I don't know why. I like those a lot with the mountains. I would have to say probably the Rockies.
Pretty clearly the Rockies. If you want my opinion, honestly, I don't know that any team got close. I think the Rockies kind of nailed it on that.
Did you see, the Dodgers now are getting a second City Connect. So apparently they went through all the teams. The Yankees declined doing one. I was just reading about this. Then the Dodgers are getting their second City Connect. So apparently this was a 3-year cycle, and now I guess they're doing another cycle. I don't know.
I guess we'll see, or maybe they just like the Dodgers a little bit extra. Who knows? Who knows, man? So speaking of the Twins, I want to bring something up because I saw some news about the Twins today. And, you know, we've talked in the past about the 2019 draft and some of the guys to come out of it. I mean, that's the draft that gave us Adley Rutschman and Bobby Witt Jr., Riley Green, CJ Abrams, Josh Young, right? And that's just within the top 10.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Alek Manoah came from that draft, right? Andrew Vaughn, JJ Bleday, right? They're contributors too, not at the highest level. Shea Langeliers. This is a good draft. You know, I can keep going. Brett Beatty, Bryson Stott, Corbin Carroll, Jackson Rutledge, George Kirby came out of this draft. Anthony Volpe came out of this draft. I'm pretty sure this is the draft where the Orioles got Gunnar Henderson as well. So this is the draft where they got Henderson. So this
stacked.
Yeah. There are some very good contributors that have come out of this draft class. That's not exactly what I want to talk about. The Twins, 13th overall, took a guy named Keone Kavako, I should say. And Kavako was kind of a last second guy who had helium, and they took him 13th overall, right in between Brett Beatty and Bryson Stott. 15th overall went Corbin Carroll. Well, today I saw a tweet from JJ Cooper at Baseball America, and it said that the Twins released Keone Kavako, the 13th overall pick from 2019. Now, he hadn't made it past high A. He had a .212 career batting average. Like, he wasn't playing well. Ouch. But, I mean, that's just rough for an organization to have to release the 13th overall pick that they made just half a decade ago, and he never made it above high A.
Yeah, to not make it above high A, that's very surprising. I honestly had never heard of him. You text me this before we were recording tonight. I had actually never heard of the guy. And the list of people they could have chosen hurts many of the names you just said. So what's the backstory on him? He was a hot run and...
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he was highly rated. Like MLB Pipeline had him 28th ranked in that draft year. So it's not like he was taken out of nowhere. He was a high school bat out of California. High schoolers tend to have a few risks that come along with it. So, you know, there were some tools, I guess. He showed that he had potential to fill out some of these tools, and sometimes that just does not happen. I don't think the bat was as good as anybody thought it was going to be, because he was really supposed to be a bat first guy. So I don't know. It's just one of those picks that didn't work out. And that made me think, all right, well, what does the rest of that 2019 class look like for the Minnesota Twins? Like, have they gotten any contributors? Was this just a dud for them? They got Matt Wallner in the 39th overall in the CBA pick that year. So that's not too bad. Wallner's been up and contributed at the major league level. Matt Cantorino, who looked like he was going to be a big contributor until injuries have kind of derailed his prospect status. He was their second round pick that year. Here's where this draft class really starts to hurt if you're a Minnesota Twins fan. If you're a Minnesota Twins fan listening to this podcast, I apologize, but I didn't make the picks. So, the third round, they have an MLB contributor who is no longer in the organization and has not contributed to the organization, has always been in another organization. Do you want to take a wild guess as to who it might be? Was traded away from the Twins and now is contributing for another organization.
Yeah, I know. I can guess who it is because I know it was part of the Reds trade.
Yes.
Yes. Spencer Steer.
Spencer Steer, that's their third round pick who would have been great for you, but he's somewhere else now. Fourth round, they got Seth Gray, a guy who had a really good glove. That never quite worked out. I was just going to skip down here to the sixth round. Another person who has contributed to an MLB team, but not the Twins. Pitcher, do you have any guesses? It's just going to get harder. You have no reason to have a guess of who this is, so... Good luck.
No, all I know is they got hosed in that trade because I think, what's his name? Now I can't think of the pitcher they traded for, but he got hurt. Tyler, what's his name? Tyler Male or Malhay. Do you know what I'm talking
oh,
about?
You're still thinking the Reds trade. Okay. Yeah, this guy was in a completely different trade.
Oh, but separate trade. I don't know. Yeah. I have no idea.
This trade would have been, I want to say Michael Fulmer, if that's a helpful hint for you. It may not have actually been Michael Fulmer, but that should give you the team that the guy is playing for currently.
Boy, I don't know. Nope, I got nothing.
It was the Michael Fulmer trade. So he was Fulmer went from the Tigers to the Twins, and the Twins sent back Sawyer Gibson Long, their sixth round pick in 2019. So again, another guy who could have helped them contribute or could have contributed for them and hasn't. You go down to the 15th round, you get Louis Varland. He's not bad. The 18th round, you get Edouard Julien.
Okay, he's in AAA. He has seen the majors.
Yes, he has. So, I mean, you got a couple contributors for your team. Oh, here's one that hurts. You remember talking about Drew Gilbert?
Mm-hmm.
They took him in the 35th round, but he didn't sign. So they took him out of high school. So, like, they have some guys in that draft, but two of the bigger ones are doing it for other teams. Their first round pick, they just had to let go of. I mean, Wallner, Julien, Varland are your contributors from that class, man. That's just kind of rough to go through.
Yeah. Yeah, that is rough. Can't happen that often where they just a first round pick never makes it above A ball and gets cut. I mean, obviously,
it really doesn't because just from the simple fact that the team is investing so much in their first round picks, both monetarily and just value wise, right? Because they have a list of guys that they can take and they say, you're the one we want. So they tend to push them, you know, regardless to see what they do at different levels. But I mean, if you ever watched Keone Cavaco, man, he just never looked comfortable or like he was good at that level. There might have been a few stretches here and there where he was able to show off that upside, but I mean, best of luck to the future baseball career of Keone Cavaco. Maybe another team will take a chance on him. Maybe the Dodgers will take him and turn him into a future all-star. Who knows? But best of luck wherever he does in baseball, but just a sad moment that he has to get cut by the organization that picked him 13th overall.
That's tough. That is tough.
So let's go from one first-round pick to another first-round pick, this one going a little bit better. Garrett Crochet, we've talked about him a lot, but reason to talk about him again, Nate.
Yeah, I would say probably the best start of his career this past week. Masterful performance, 7 innings, 2 hits, 1 earned run, 13 strikeouts against the Mariners. Which is interesting because I've seen a lot of trade rumors for him as well. I don't know if you're seeing that, but that start only helped him and increased those trade rumors and maybe increased what the White Sox might get back for him. But have you seen any of the chatter that's going around with Crochet?
No, not specifically, but it doesn't surprise me because anybody who's good on a bad team is going to be talked about. Hey, they should trade him. They should try to get prospects, try to expedite that rebuild, whatever. Usually I go, why would they trade a young person who has multiple years of control? Cause you don't know where your team's going to be by the, you know, by the time he's through arbitration.
Mm-hmm.
With Garrett Crochet, kind of think that the White Sox should trade him. I think I'm in that boat. And it's not because I don't think the White Sox can turn it around really quickly. I mean, they're in the AL Central. It's not the strongest division. We've seen the Royals who have gone from what looked like a rebuild to being competitive. But the problem with Garrett Crochet is his injury history. And so if you're going to move Garrett Crochet, I think you have to seriously consider doing it right now because you don't want him to get hurt again. And his injury history is already going to put going to lower the price of where he's performing at right now. But also as of right now, it should be his highest level of value that he's going to have, because he has been on fire all year. He has been fantastic, and he's doing it as a starter. So right. If you can send him to a team that's looking to compete, and you can get some top prospects back, that would be a really, really good move if you are the White Sox. Like, I'm not saying this is a thing, but if you're going to – they wouldn't trade him in division, but let's say the Royals are like, hey, let's go for it right now. And you can get, you know, some of their recent high draft picks, or if there's some people you like, you know, Caden Wallace, the third baseman, Blake Walters, the pitcher, Blake Mitchell, the catcher they just drafted, right? If you could do that, and that's just a really weird example because they wouldn't trade him to the Royals, but, you know, that might be good for you because you might not have that chance again with Garrett Crochet. So it would make some sense. Maybe you take some a chance on upside, send him to Atlanta, try to get like Spencer Schwellenbach back, who's already been in the major leagues. You know, you just get some young talent that might be able to help you out.
Yeah, the story I'm reading here, it said that kind of exactly what you're saying, the value is probably never higher than he is right now. So that huge asking price, hoping that contenders aren't deterred by his injury history and also the potential need to curtail his innings in the second half, maybe moving him to a reliever in the postseason. So I would think the Padres are in and interested. I think we talked about them before, and probably anyone else, you know, any of the teams that aren't scared to make a move and have postseason aspirations, maybe the Dodgers, who knows. I saw the White Sox are also looking to trade Luis Robert, so some big moves could be happening. I think Grochet, though, with him from a fantasy perspective, if he did move to a better team, actually his value could go down if they start to limit his innings or eventually just move him to the bullpen. He would lose some fantasy value.
Yeah, I think you're right. And it really is going to depend on what the new potential team of Garrett Crochet is wanting to do. I will say that also, I think he... I don't know, man. I'd be worried about the ballpark he goes to just a little bit, I think.
That's a good point, too.
I mean, it's not, you know, the ground ball, fly ball splits, like, they're not insanely bad or anything, but I think, you know, if he goes to a small park, right, if he goes to a short porch park, I think that could potentially hurt him as well. That's just me talking and overthinking it. I honestly don't even think the White Sox are going to trade him. Here's the thing. I don't know if you notice this. I notice this all the time. We, as public analysts who just go over this stuff, who try to guess what's going to happen, we always think that teams should trade these guys when they have 2 or 3 years left, because we know that that's when the value is the highest. Mm-hmm. Teams don't generally do that, right? Fans are always mad at teams for waiting too long to trade guys, but they wait for a reason because they don't have to make the move. So unless they get blown away by an offer, unless somebody comes to the White Sox and says, hey, we are going to give you the moon and the stars because we want Garrett Crochet in our uniform, they're probably not going to move him because he still has, I think, 2 arbitration years left after this season. So we could talk about these rumors, and I'm sure that there are some. I'm sure teams are going to call on them, but they're probably going to have to meet an insanely high price in order to make it work. But that's just my experience, right? Because I've always wanted teams to be like, you know, the Tigers are a perfect example. I wanted them to trade Nick Castellanos at least a year before they actually did. And instead of getting, you know, a high-level prospects, they wind up getting prospect package that's highlighted right now by Alex Lang, which isn't bad, but you're getting essentially a back end reliever for a middle of the order hitter on one of your bad teams. So, you know, it's give and take, but also sometimes you just wait too long. Like when they traded, I'm sorry, I got the Tigers trades in my head right now, and a previous regime was not great at it. Trading JD Martinez to the to the Diamondbacks, they waited a long time and just took whatever came to them. And I mean, could you honestly tell me any of the prospects that came back in that trade? I can tell you all three. But honestly, can you?
No, I can't.
It was Dowell Lugo was one of them. Jose King was another one. Dowell Lugo played. He got a few back. He was never that great for the Tigers. But he did make it to the Tigers at one point. Jose King, who several years after the J.D. Martinez trade, I saw playing in high A. Right, they got him, and they also got Sergio Alcantara. Those were the three prospects they got for J.D. Martinez, who, as especially at that time, was J.D. Martinez.
Yeah, he went on a tear then. It seems like, you know, the teams, they don't want to get burned either by, we think they should trade him early, but they want to see more from the person while they're still on their team as well. Like a prospect trading while their value is high. But they think, well, maybe he can still be good with us, you know?
Right. Well,
they don't want to have to give up.
It's hard to imagine teams are worried about like losing the trade or getting embarrassed, because here's the thing. And at least this is, maybe I'm wrong. This is what I believe. And this is how I think organizations should be thinking if they don't, which doesn't necessarily mean anything. You know, this is just my two cents as somebody who happens to be in an industry, you know, or happens to pretend to talk about this stuff. When it comes to trading, teams shouldn't care what happens with the players they give away. I'll use the Cardinals as an example. The Cardinals get clowned all the time for trading away big name players, right? They trade Luke Voit away to the Yankees and he becomes huge. They trade Randy Rosarena to the Rays and he becomes huge. They trade, Lane Thomas, Adolis Garcia, right? All these players that are no longer in the organization that they didn't quite have the room for have moved on and become really good players for other organizations. But the Cardinals in this situation were trading from a surplus. So they picked the players they wanted, and maybe they picked wrong. I get it, because they decided to keep like Dylan Carlson and other players maybe that, you know, weren't necessarily the ones that popped off as much. But when you trade Luke Voit away and in return you get Giovanni Gallegos, well, you've gotten a piece that helped your organization win. I can't really say for the Randy Rosarena trade that they've done that. But, you know, in terms of when teams do this trading, and again, the Cardinals were just the example, they should worry more about what comes back to them rather than what they're giving away, because what you give away is no longer in your organization and is no longer helping you win. And I know that's probably a naive way to look at it, because winning, losing trades, whatever, and that's how you can grade front offices. I get that. But if I'm an organization trying to win, I care more about what's in my organization than what I had to give away to get that. So again, I'm going to use that same example. Cardinals trade Luke Voit to the Yankees, and Luke Voit has a phenomenal few years. Phenomenal might be a stretch. He has a really good few years after getting traded. But what you bring in on that trade, Giovanni Gallegos, he has helped your organization for a few years now. And I think that's where organizations should be focusing, if they're not, is what comes in, not what goes out.
And it's not a fantasy. It's not a fantasy league like we are thinking about, right?
Right.
This is real life with many other ramifications and other factors than how we think about it.
Exactly. And one of the real life factors, Nate, is that Coffee Talk is going to have to take a quick time out right now to hear from our wonderful sponsors. We will have more Coffee Talk coming up. Of course, Coffee Talk is part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. And let me tell you, we are always ready for that next cup of coffee. And welcome back to Coffee Talk on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. We're always ready for that next cup of coffee. My name is Trevor Huth. I'm joined by Nate, the Great Kosher. And we have been talking about some, trades mostly. We also talked a little bit about injuries, Garrett Crochet, all that stuff. And there is another injury, and it's going to sound like you're just listening to an old episode, because I know we've talked about this player getting hurt before, and I know it hurts both of us probably equally, probably you more, because you're a Diamondbacks fan. I just am a fan of Jordan Lawler, and he's on several of my dynasty teams. Jordan Lawler got hurt again, Nate.
Yes. Tough year for Jordan Lawler. So he has a hamstring strain, and they expect him to be out 4 to 6 weeks. So really, really stinky, to say the least. Bad, frustrating year for him. So he missed first couple months of the season. Remember, he hurt his right thumb. And then he did play 11 games this year. I pulled up his stats here between AAA and Reno, or AAA Reno and a rehab assignment, and he went 16 for 45. That's a .356 average, 5 doubles, 1 triple, 1 home run, and 5 steals. And the Diamondbacks at third base haven't been getting much out of Suarez, Eugenio Suarez. So actually there had been talk about moving Lawler to third base and having him come up to take that spot. So it might just be a lost year for him at this point. I mean, 4 to 6 weeks, that puts you end of July. He's probably not done for the year, but it just seems like maybe one of those bad luck years you have to write off.
And, you know, those do happen, right? It's not the end of the world. I hate to say it this way, Nate, and I really do. At least it was his lower body. He's missed significant time with a shoulder thing. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, it was a thumb thing at the beginning of this year. Now it's a hamstring strain. So, I mean, at least maybe his upper body's okay and healing. I don't know, man. These are tough years. And these are the kind of years where if you really believe, just I'm talking from a fantasy perspective, and I know that, again, this is a redraft podcast for the most part, but if you're in a dynasty league, these are the kind of years where if you believe in the prospect, you go buy low, because his stock in terms of trade value in fantasy baseball is going to take a huge hit. He hasn't been on the field. People are like, well, is he hurt? Is he going to be able to perform? I hope he is, because he's one of the best prospects that I've ever written a scouting report for, hands down. Not close. But I wrote that before his first major injury. So we'll have to see. Man, we'll just have to see. And hopefully he can come back and still be that like really solid player everybody thought that he was going to be when he was taken sixth overall in 2021 by the Diamondbacks.
I do think, like you said, it would be a ultimate buy low situation. Second injury of this year. Really, it's too bad, because he would have been playing in the majors, no doubt. Yeah. And now there's even been places he could have gotten plugged into, because the Diamondbacks have had a lot of other injuries. So the opportunity was there for him, but unfortunately not going to happen. He's almost 22 years old. So next season, 23, I would think, let's say he doesn't play in the majors this year, or maybe his hamstring injury lingers. I would think he has a chance maybe to make the opening day roster right out of camp, or else he would be down in AAA for a little bit, just because they want to get him to the bigs. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. And they should want to, right? He is an insanely good baseball player. And, you know, he's coming from a draft that has some real highs and real lows. I was just looking at the first round again. I don't mean to always bring up the draft class of these guys, but it's super interesting to look at. That was the year Henry Davis went first overall to the Pirates. Second overall was Jack Leiter, who has not done well in the majors this year. Jackson Jobe, Marcelo Mayer, taken back-to-back in the controversial decision to take Jackson Jobe over Marcelo Mayer, that I love, by the way. I would have probably made the same decision. Colton Cowser comes out of that draft, and those were the guys taken before Lawler, and then it gets a little weird. I mean, Frank Mazzucato has not been what everyone thought he was going to be. Benny Montgomery, Sam Bachman, Kumar Rocker didn't even sign, Brady House. Andrew Painter has had his bout with injuries.
He was almost there last year and then got hurt.
And then you see Sal Frelick, Matt McClain. You know, you see some guys, Jordan Wicks, Colson Montgomery, Gavin Williams. So there are some guys there. Jackson Merrill, 27th that year. Yeah. But there's also some guys like Khalil Watson has already been traded. Trey Sweeney has already been traded. Ryan Cusick has been traded. Chase Petty has been traded already. You know, these first rounds, like, you try your best and sometimes they don't work out. You just hope that it's not, you know, the Lawler thing isn't going to work out because of the injuries. That is an awful way for somebody's career not to work out.
Exactly. But, yeah.
Again, it is what it is. There's a hamstring. People come back from hamstrings. We'll have to see. Hopefully there's nothing lingering. I'm sure that he's not going to be up this year, as you said. I think the Diamondbacks will want to take their time with him, just let him work back, build up strength, whatever he has to do, and then hopefully give him a shot out of camp next year. And I think they would be foolish not to. I really do.
Yeah, agreed.
So, how about some fantasy French press? Now, I saw that you put Jonathan Cannon out here, pitcher for the White Sox. What are you thinking about Jonathan Cannon, Nate?
Yeah, so more White Sox. It wasn't necessarily on purpose. I was just putting some things together. But Jonathan Cannon, he had an excellent, excellent start of his own this past week. So he went, I believe, 7 innings. Yes, he tossed 7 scoreless innings for the White Sox, and it was by far his best start of his career. 1 earned run, 4 hits, 7 strikeouts. But he has started a number of games here. Let's see. He has started 5 games. 2 of the games he went 5 innings. 2 of the other games he went 3 innings. So this was by far his longest look and the best look. But the reason why I bring him up is he probably has a chance to stick around in the rotation for the White Sox, pending the trades, the potential trades that we were talking about. And they've also had some injuries. So that it just that high of a caliber start jumped out at me. So I was doing a little bit more reading about him. He was the rated prospect for the Sox. And in our beginning of the podcast ranking, we're going through all the prospects and when they were expected. He was expected not until next year, 2025. And they said he stands out more for his floor than his ceiling. He may not need much time in the minors to become a number 4 starter. So maybe not the most exciting guy, but big and tall. And I just thought that was a really nice start, unexpectedly. So thought it would be worth talking about.
Yeah, he's another one of those, and I'm going to sound like a broken record, Nate. I really am. He's one of those guys who the command has to be there that day. You know, he's a guy that I've been able to watch a few times, and there's some good stuff there, but it's not necessarily overpowering. And so if he doesn't have his command again, that's what leads him to be that 4th, 5th starter. Is that he's going to go out there and compete for you. But in terms of fantasy, if he's not completely on, he's going to be a really tough guy to play. And those are hard guys to know when they're going to be on, right? You could try to play the matchups the best you can, but it's baseball. He'll get blown up by the Marlins for 12 runs and then come back a week later and shut out the Dodgers for 6 innings. It's just, that's how the game of baseball works.
Yeah. And you know, that the description that you just ran through reminds me a lot of what we talked about with Robert Gasser, actually, and how we said what he might be in real life, what he might be in fantasy. And I just saw recently, too, I think he's getting shut down for the year. So that's too bad because Gasser did have some success, probably more than we were thinking early on.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Had some great starts. But unfortunately, some elbow pain and now I just read today, it sounds like he's going to be shut down. But that same kind of scouting report was how we talked about him.
Yeah, and it's, again, it's a whole archetype of pitcher, right? And just because you're command first doesn't mean you can't pitch to better than, you know, being a fourth or fifth guy. I mean, look at Kyle Hendricks for a lot of years. It's just when you're trying to project a guy out, if you're not overwhelmed by his stuff, by one pitch, two pitches, whatever, and what you're overwhelmed by is the fact that, man, he can really locate, he can spot up, it's tough to project him out. And part of that could be looking at how they use their pitches and how they sequence and all that stuff. But again, a great start for Jonathan Cannon. He should have an opportunity to stick and show what he's got. And hopefully that's something good. I'm going to throw out another guy at you, not on our episode outline, as I'm sure you're used to by now. Over his last 14 games, this player has a 404 batting average, a 478 on base percentage, 7 home runs, and 18 RBIs. He is a former top prospect for his team who is a couple years removed from that. His name's Helio Ramos with the San Francisco Giants, kind of a post-hype guy in a lot of ways. I was never personally a huge fan when he was a prospect, but, you know, the 2024 season right now, he's got 136 at-bats, 9 home runs, he's hitting .331. So, I mean, hey.
Yeah, that's I did see his name. I can't remember now where I read it, but yes, he's been super hot lately, and he's more exciting, I think, than Cannon for a pickup. But yeah, he's been raking.
He has, and it's good to see. I mean, could,
someone that hot, like, I don't have a problem saying if you have someone you can drop, might as well see if you can keep it going for a couple weeks.
This is a Matt Vierling situation with somebody who had higher prospect status coming up. Because Helio Ramos was a top 100 prospect for years. He just kind of fell off, and then he kind of made his debut and didn't have a spot. And who knows if he still has a spot. I mean, the Giants have been kind of weird about it, but he's hitting really well right now. And if he didn't have a spot before, I'm guessing he has earned one. So, you know, it's just somebody to keep an eye on, Nate.
Yeah. And a nice season line. As you said, 8 home runs, 30 RBIs. So let's project that out the rest of the season. He could end up with, let's say he kept playing, he could end up with 20 home runs if he kept playing this well all season. You know, I don't think that's out of the picture.
Sure, yeah. And I don't know if that's what you're betting on. I think at this point you're just betting on a hot bat, but absolutely, he could, right? He's a guy who had the prospect status to believe he could be figuring it out and putting it together.
Exactly. Also getting on base at a 404 clip. So really nice slash line, showing some power, and still just 24 years old. So
yeah,
that is the recommendation.
So we're going to talk more about some other guys that you might want to look into picking up on the other end of a break. Before we get to that break, I just saw a bit of news. On Wednesday, Gerrit Cole is set to make his season debut.
Ooh, that is, that's big. Probably that's
scary for the rest of the league.
Top pitcher and top fantasy pitcher going into this season. Yeah, that is big news.
Well, and it's good for the Yankees, too, because as far as I know, they've been just rocking with Cody Poteet as their fifth starter after Clark Schmidt got hurt. And so now they're getting Gerrit Cole back, and all of a sudden you're back to your full rotation of Gerrit Cole, Carlos Rodon, Marcus Stroman, and
they've had Luis Gill.
Luis Gill and Nestor Cortez. That's your five. That's a really good five.
Yeah.
That's a really good five. And you're missing Clark Schmidt, who could have made it six. Exactly. That's crazy.
Yeah, but hey, the Yankees.
Yeah, that's supposed to be Wednesday of this week. So if you're listening to this podcast after Wednesday, then it was yesterday or whatever. But Gerrit Cole set to make his debut against the Orioles this week. And what we're going to do right now, Nate, is take another quick timeout. When we come back, we will have more Coffee Talk on the Pitcherless Podcast Network, where we are always ready for that next cup of coffee. And welcome back to Coffee Talk on the Pitcherless Podcast Network. My name is Trevor Huth. I am joined by Nate Kosher, and we're talking about some guys who, I don't know, maybe you haven't looked into, maybe you haven't thought about, who might be worth picking up. We've talked about Jonathan Cannon. We've talked about Helio Ramos. What about James Outman? He's a name who's, he had some inertia heading into, was it last year, maybe this year? Like people knew about James Outman.
Yeah, so Outman in 2023, he hit 23 home runs, 70 RBI, 16 steals with a .248 average and .353 on base. So pretty good season. I mean, he struck out at a high clip, but some good counting numbers there. Coming into this season, I think people were expecting him to probably duplicate what he did last year. You might have drafted him as a third or fourth outfielder, maybe. Probably not your top outfielder, but sent down to the Dodgers in mid-May. But the reason I bring this up is that since he was sent down, so I guess it was exactly a month ago, May 17th, he's hit .292 with six home runs, 16 RBI, and a .987 OPS. But another star who is going to miss some time, Mookie Betts. I don't know if you saw that. He fractured his hand. And so Outman could be the one that gets the call. And if he can turn things around, could be interesting because of look at what he did last season. So that would be one to definitely put on your radar. I think Mookie, it's not a short-term thing. Sound like he's going to miss some time. I was just looking it up here.
I just saw the headline. I'll be honest. I have been working a lot on schoolwork. For those who don't know, I'm in grad school right now, so I don't know exactly what the injury is. But didn't I see that him and Yamamoto are out for at least a little bit of time now?
Yes, they are. Okay, here's Betts. Hit on the hand with a 98-mile-an-hour fastball. Suffered a fracture in his left wrist. Dave Roberts said he'd be headed to the injured list. And on Monday, Roberts told reporters the team is anticipating Betts to be sidelined for 6 to 8 weeks. Shouldn't require surgery, but that's still a good chunk. So hopefully he can get healed up for the playoffs is probably what the Dodgers are thinking. But that leaves a obvious large gap. Mookie Betts, probably one of the best players in the major leagues. So hard to fill his shoes, but that's going to open up a spot for someone. So maybe that could be James Outman. I would say in compared to the other people we talked about, probably second most exciting. I'd put Ramos maybe ahead of him, Cannon third, Outman second, I would say, between those two guys.
Yeah, I don't think I can disagree with that ranking, Nate. You know what? Since we've talked about the White Sox so much, can I bring up one more White Sox player? Just we've talked about him before too. Let me say this.
I mean, they deserve some discussion, right? They don't have much going for them this season.
Oh, this isn't going to be great for them. This is not going to be great. The White Sox are 19-54, which my quick math tells me that they have played 73 baseball games. Does that check out for you as well?
Yes, that is okay. What I would say.
Fantastic. They have a player that we've definitely talked about before who's played in 38 of those 73 baseball or 70 whatever baseball games and has 9 hits total. That's it. That's all the hits he has. 9.
Oh, man, that's brutal.
Of course, it's Martin Maldonado. Of course, he's there for defense, all that stuff. He is hitting .083.
.083. Oh man, that's bad. I have a counter argument to you, Trevor.
Okay.
And this is I guess I read a lot of baseball stories today, but this is what he can still bring to the team. So I saw the Diamondbacks were playing the White Sox this weekend, and they had, I'd never have heard of this guy before, but Thiago Vieira pitching, something like that. I think he was picked up off of waivers, but they did a mound visit, and basically they decided to do a bulk balk on purpose because Maldonado was figuring out what was going to happen. Vieira was tipping his pitches. And so they discovered, it says, the savvy veteran could discern what pitches Vieira was going to throw and relay them to the batter at the plate. So they basically said he was taking the ball from the side and you could see him rolling it before he put it into his hand. It was a breaking ball. If he didn't roll it, it was going to be a fastball. And Torrey Lovello said he didn't have any issues with what Maldonado was doing. It's not cheating. It's part of the game 100%. He was doing his job. But anyways, it's just funny because I just heard that, or I just read that today. And so they did an intentional balk to move him forward on the base path. So crafty veteran, but you got to hit more than 9 hits, right? You got... That's not
very, very smart baseball man. Absolutely has his value, or he wouldn't have been in the league as long as he has been. I don't really have any negativity towards Martin Maldonado, other than the fact that he, for lack of a nicer way to say it, swings a wet noodle for a bat. I mean, I have no other, some people just aren't great hitters, and the value he has to add to hit like that and still be on a major league team this long is immense, right? He has so much value, and he's probably going to make a fantastic manager one day. But today, as a 37-year-old catcher for the Chicago White Sox, is not a major league hitter.
That's a great point. He will be a coach or prospect.
If he wants to, right? So, I mean, good for Martin Maldonado to carve out the career he has. I think it's a fantastic career, and again, I don't mean this to sound so negative towards him, but dude, 9 hits, I couldn't get 9 hits. That's 9 more hits than I would get personally as a podcaster. But
yeah, still. same here, but
all right, but let's flip this around. Let me get something good out of this. All right, let's bring up, I got another player that people might want to look into. That is an outfielder for the Mariners, Dominic Canzone. He's hitting .211 on the season through 95 at bats. He has 6 home runs while hitting .211 through 95 at bats. Over the last 7 games that he's played, he is hitting .368 with 1 home run, 3 RBIs, walked 3 times. I mean, hey, he's picking up some steam, right? He's getting pretty regular playing time in Seattle, so he's another one of those guys. He was on prospect status for a while. Maybe it's worth picking him up, ride out the hot streak if you can.
Yeah, he was. I know we talk a lot about the Tigers and Diamondbacks, but he was on the Diamondbacks or in the Diamondback system. I believe.
Yes, he was.
Okay, yes, yeah, I thought I'd heard his name sounded familiar.
Mm-hmm. He was traded he was in the Seawald trade.
The Seawald, yeah, exactly. There it is. So I was at the All-Star break last season when I went and got Paul Seawald. But yeah, that's nice. That's someone that can play probably. Well, they must have him in a platoon, I would guess. He's probably kind of starting part-time.
Mm-hmm.
But a bat against, let's see, yes, he's been playing against right-handers. But that's a nice stat line, and I do remember when he was with the Diamondbacks, and, you know, he was well thought of.
Yeah, he was a guy who performed a little bit. I remember doing the daily sheet, and he was a guy who I talked about because I was covering the double-A level. Tell you what, before last thing I want to do here on this podcast, Nate, let's do some triple-A check-ins. Our guys who have been sent down, see how they're doing. Spencer Torkelson hitting .286 through 49 at bats in AAA for Toledo. He's now 12 games into his tenure there, and he has one home run.
Okay.
He was off at a torrid pace. Seems like he might have slowed down a little bit. Yeah.
Not the worst stat line in the world, but someone we think will probably not be there long, hopefully.
If he hits. All, I mean, I have no other way to say it. If he hits.
Oh, right. Yep.
All right. How about Reed Detmers, who has two starts now, totaling 11 innings. He's given up 14 hits, five home runs. Remember, four of those were in his first start. He has 15 strikeouts and a 7.36 ERA now. So that means his second start went a little bit better than his first start did. In terms of giving up home runs, but still got a massively high ERA. He's only thrown 11 innings. It's the Reed Detmers experience continues to be just that, an experience.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we almost have to throw that first start out because it sounds like they were just like, you know, go work on some stuff, not go try to win the game almost. So that might be an outlier, but you'd like to see more from him.
Yes, you would. You absolutely would. We'll see what happens. Again, you're working on certain things in the minor leagues. We get that here on Coffee Talk. We understand. Another news, or more news of somebody being sent down. Johan Rojas of the Phillies has been sent down with the announcement that Trey Turner is going to be reinstated from the injured list. Now, Rojas is a defensive star. He has been amazing in the outfield. Offense has been a little tricky, I believe. Struck out 25-ish% of the time, walked 3%, but did slash 302, 342, 340. Just reading an article, so I'm not fully sure if that's this year or not. Maybe that was when he got called up last year, but still, Johan Rojas, kind of a polarizing player, always has been, and now he's going back down to AAA with Trey Turner coming back.
And, yeah, I mean, obvious move, you need to put Trey Turner in. I think it was last season Trey Turner kind of had a bad year till the end. He started to, I think, improve a little bit. But when he's on, one of the best in all of baseball and fantasy baseball.
Mm-hmm. Let me clarify that I was reading stats from 2023, Johan Rojas. That's why he got the opportunity again this year. This year, in 183 at-bats, he's slashing .235, .271, .295. He's got two home runs, 14 stolen bases, though, and 31 strikeouts, seven walks. Already walked more times than last year because I had a few more at bats. So see, he's just kind of a free swinger who can make things happen, and he's fast and really good at defense.
So that makes me think of someone, Trevor. Victor Scott. What's he been up to?
Victor Scott. Yeah, he's been, you know, when we've checked in, he's always been struggling. It seemed like he was kind of turning it around a little bit. Maybe we will pull it up right now. He is hitting .187. He's got three home runs. Still not doing great. He's hitting he's hitting 67 over his last seven games, hitting 73 over his last 15, and 85 over his last 30. So he is not hitting very well right now. The bat's just not there like people thought it was going to be. I don't know if that's in his head or what, but yeah, that's rough.
That's too bad.
He might turn around again.
Did he make it out of camp, or it was right away in the season they called him up?
No, he made it out of camp. I think there was an injury. It might have been the Newt Barr injury. I don't remember, but he made it right out of camp and didn't perform. They sent him down, and maybe that's what got in his head. I don't know, but he'd rocketed through the system. I believe the tools are still there. I don't know. We're just going to have to see with some of these guys what happens. You hope they turn it around.
Yeah, you really do. And reading through those drafts, though, it is sort of a tale of what happens, right? So some of them make it, some of them don't make it or won't ever pan out. And you hope your team has the ones that do pan out.
Absolutely. Victor Scott was a fifth round pick in the 2022 draft. So let's think about that. If we look at the Cardinals draft, that was the Jackson Holiday draft. He was the first of that group to reach the majors, as I'm sure you could imagine. Their first round pick that year was Cooper Jerpy, pitcher out of Boston College? Oregon State, which is not Boston College. Oregon State is where he's out of, but you know, kind of lefty, weird angle. I've seen him. He's got some stuff, but yeah, the fifth round pick from that year was the first to make it up, and things aren't looking that good. So you're kind of hoping on Cooper Jerpy or Bryson Mouts, who's another guy people like a lot, kind of turned around. They also took catcher Jimmy Crooks the fourth round that year. I really liked Jimmy Crooks. I have no idea what he's doing now, but when I saw him, what would have been the beginning of last year, I really liked Jimmy Crooks. He is currently in Double A, hitting .297.
Oh,
so okay. Not bad. We'll have to see. Yeah, that's I find it so interesting to look back on these draft classes. Like, we could have a whole segment where we just pick a year, look at the draft class, see what happened. Because I love doing that. I'm not going to lie. I think it's so interesting who took who, especially for the classes that, you know, I tried to scout a little bit. Obviously, it's hard to do full out because high schoolers, you can't really get video and, you know, you only got so much time in the day. But
yeah, that is fun. And baseball, it's so much more, at the end of the day, a crapshoot than I think the NFL or the NBA is, just going through the first round picks. In the NFL, it's almost like top 10 picks, maybe 75% of the time pan out, you know, or something like that. And
something baseball, ridiculous, yeah.
Yeah, baseball, it's a lot harder to quantify down the road. And that's what makes it fun, actually.
Yeah, well, and it's a longer journey to get there for a lot of them. And that's kind of, I think, where the disconnect between baseball and other sports is. But Nate, another episode in the books here. I think this is our 14th episode of Coffee Talk. Fantastic. We're moving right along. We appreciate all of you who are listening to us. Make sure to follow our Twitter accounts. You can find Nate at Nathaniel Kosher on Twitter. You can find me at Huth Trevor on Twitter. And of course, Coffee Talk is at Coffee Talk PL. Nate, it's always great to talk to you every week.
Yes, always fun, Trevor, and so we will see you next week.
Yes, we will. You've listened, actually, to another episode of Coffee Talk on the Pitcherless Podcast Network, where we are always ready for that next cup of coffee.